in the big picture thing, I kind of completely rearranged my business in terms of the brand didn't really change. And I think a lot of people on the outside like maybe didn't even notice, but I kind of completely shifted the way that I brought in revenue and the things that I was teaching. But also in like the really kind of zoomed in way, I still do this. I look at everything I'm doing and I say, how does this make me feel? And if the answer is not good, the answer is like, this makes me feel like shit. Then I look at, do I need to do it? Do I really have to do it? Because we have a lot of things that we say we have to do that we don't. Can I get help on it? Or can it take a different form? Is there something I could shift about it that would make it feel better?
That was Tiffany Hahn, and you're listening to Real Talk Radio with Nicole Antoinette, episode 145. Welcome to Real Talk Radio with Nicole Antoinette. That's me, the podcast that's filled with refreshingly honest conversations about the wonderful mess of being human. On this show, my guests and I are committed to one simple but powerful thing, telling the truth about our lives. No one's here to sell you anything. No one's trying to get you to fix yourself or your life. I certainly don't have any magic answers, and I can't give you a miraculous 10-day, 6-step life hack plan for anything. Sorry, not sorry. But as a recovering self-help junkie myself, I'm honestly so over that approach, and my guess is that maybe you are too. Maybe that's even why you're here. So no, that's not what this show's about. Here at Real Talk Radio, I sit down with athletes, writers, entrepreneurs, parents, coaches, adventurers, artists, activists, and many others. And we dive deep into meaningful topics. We talk about work, love, sex, money, addiction, friendship, racism, body image, mental health, grief, fear, courage, change, and everything in between. This is definitely an adult podcast covering adult subjects, often using adult language, so there's your little warning for that. And we never shy away from telling the unfiltered truth in an open and honest way, even when it's uncomfortable. So with this mission in mind, you won't hear any ads or sponsor promotions. These honest conversations are 100% listener funded. How awesome is that? And that's made possible by incredible regular people like you who give $8 or more per 8-episode season. The show is and will always be free. But if you love it, if these conversations make you laugh, think, or just feel less alone, my hope is that you'll go to patreon.com/Nicole Antoinette to make your pledge of $8 or more per 8-episode season. When you get over to Patreon, you'll see our current funding goal. And when we reach that goal, it means that every single person who works on this show will get paid. That includes me and my sound engineer, Adam Day, as well as every single guest who comes onto the show. Because that's my vision, for each of our guests to be paid for the time, energy, honesty, care, and emotional labor that they bring to these conversations. The budget won't be huge to start with, and will hopefully continue to grow over time. But higher rates will always be paid to our guests of color, as well as our queer and trans guests and others with traditionally marginalized identities. Being able to pay all of our guests has been a dream of mine for a while now, because as you've probably heard me say before, I fully believe that where we spend our money is a real-time vote for the kind of world that we want to live in. And if I want to live in a world where people get paid for the work they do, especially creative work, then that means it's up to me to create that model here at Real Talk Radio, even if it's definitely not the norm in the podcast industry. So please know that when you help to fund this show, you're using your money as a vote for a world of honest, judgment-free conversations. You're voting to hear more stories from a wide-ranging group of people, the vast majority of whom are women, and you're voting to pay those folks for the entertainment and education that they so expertly provide for us. When you support this show, you're basically just saying loudly and proudly that these voices deserve to be heard, and that no topic should be off limits due to fear or shame. And as a special thank you for supporting the show, you'll get access to over 40 hours of bonus content, as well as our monthly book club, my weekly behind-the-scenes email series where I share my real life in real time. Oh, if you think it gets vulnerable and honest on the podcast, just wait until you start getting my emails. Plus, you'll be the first to know when tickets go on sale for Real Talk Live events and retreats. Also, 5% of each season's profits are donated to social justice organizations, such as Black Lives Matter, the Venture Out Project, and the Refugee and Immigrant Center for Education and Legal Services. So you can feel really good about that aspect of your pledge contribution to this show as well. Over on the Patreon page, you'll see that there are currently 3 different funding levels. There's an $8 level, a $16 level, and a $25 level, each with their own unique, awesome bonuses. At the $25 level, we even do live Google Hangouts together, and oh my gosh, those are so much fun. They've seriously become something that I look forward to all the time. So once more, that's patreon.com/Nicole Antoinette. And at the very end of this episode, you'll actually get to meet one of our Patreon community members who joins me for a fun little rapid-fire question round. So stick around for that after the main episode for sure. And now let's dive right into today's episode. Today, you'll get to meet Tiffany Hahn. Tiffany is a creative coach and mentor for highly creative women and the host of the Raise Your Hand, Say Yes podcast. She crafts programs and resources that help female entrepreneurs define their work, speak their truths, and take bold, inspired action toward being more successful in their creative business and also having as much fun as possible. In this episode, Tiffany and I dig into an honest conversation about change and what it's looked and felt like for us to create big changes in our own lives over the past few years. We talk about fear, about the small practical shifts that have had important results, and we talk about what helps us when we're feeling stuck and overwhelmed. Tiffany also shares her story of quitting drinking and of her year-long project called A Year of Truth Talks that she's working on right now. She shares the questions that she likes to ask herself to get to the heart of what's true and so much more. I adore Tiffany, and I hope that you like this conversation as much as I did. It was one of my favorites. All of that starts in just a moment, and as always, you'll be able to find all the links and resources mentioned in this episode over in the show notes at nicoleantoinette.com/podcast. All right, we are good to go. Tiffany, welcome back.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. So excited to be here. I'm excited to see where this conversation goes.
I know. I'm always so interested, especially when it's been a while since I had someone on the show or when we haven't gotten to catch up really in a while. And I've been following very closely your life on Instagram, and it seems like there's lots of good stuff that we can dig into. So I'm excited as well.
Yeah.
Here's a place to start. Tell me something. It can be a big thing or a small thing that you would love to brag about a little bit and celebrate.
Oh gosh. What a fun opportunity to do that I never do. You know what I want to brag about and celebrate? And this is something that happened a couple months ago, and I haven't really been talking about it. And everybody that I mention it to is like, why aren't you talking about that? My podcast hit 1 million downloads.
Oh man, that's incredible.
Yeah. And, that feels really exciting. And I'm in a place right now where I'm like too busy to acknowledge the moment. And I also know that like, that's bullshit and I need to acknowledge the moment and celebrate it. So I will brag about that.
Yeah, I love that. I've been thinking about this more lately, how often we skip over, you know, yes, milestones or goals or, and I don't mean like, let's all turn into wildly narcissistic, like braggy, you know, people, mm-hmm, but there's a middle ground, I think, between being, you know, ignoring the things that should be celebrated and whatever, yeah, the complete opposite of that is. And I think especially as women, it's not done that often. And I've been even trying to create that culture in my friendship of like, what went really well this week? What are you proud of? Like, what did you do? Like, just to have sort of build the skill of talking about your achievements and accomplishments, yeah, and things that you're proud of, whether it's personal stuff or family stuff or work stuff, to be able to be like, hey, I worked really hard and did this thing and it had these results and I feel great about that. And then to have, mm-hmm, the people in your life be like, hell yeah, I think there's something awesome about that.
Yeah. And I think too, as, overachievers, which I would say probably, I would suspect you relate to that too, and probably a lot of people in your audience do as well. As overachievers, it's really easy to just sort of tick off our accomplishments and be like, great, what's next? What's next? What's next? And to kind of keep going, right? To keep sort of, it's like we hoard things. And I've been thinking a lot about this milestone that I hit with my podcast, right? And because people have been reaching out to me and being like, I heard you mention this. Why aren't you shouting it from the rooftops? What's wrong with you? It's sort of like taking that Oscar or the Grammy or whatever and actually like polishing it and putting it on a shelf and letting it be seen.
Yeah, I think there's something about this that's interesting to me too, about occupying the space of like a both and, in terms of, you know, content and grateful and happy for the things that are happening. And also like, it's fine to have goals and ambitions and to strive for, yes, other things. And I think sometimes those are seen as mutually exclusive. Like, what's wrong with you that you can't just be content with the things that you have, or, you know, always reaching for more versus, mm-hmm, the sort of being stagnant and stuck and not having ambition. I don't know, like the way that that's talked about too. Like, I think both are really possible. It's possible to be thrilled and grateful and, you know, present as much as you can. And also to be like, no, I'm working towards other stuff. I want other stuff too.
Yes. Yes. And then we don't have to feel ashamed of our desires for other things. I've experienced this a lot in my own life around like my body and the sort of thing where like I feel like we're getting a lot of, and I am not, I'm going to also put a giant asterisk on this, I am not a body person. So I'm very aware of my language when I talk about this, but this is also just my own personal experience. Like my body changed a lot after I had my twins, and I have sort of shifted my relationship with my body over the last few years. And it is this place where like, I love it for what it is. And at the same time, I want it to be as strong and healthy as possible. And for a while I felt like I couldn't be in both spaces, that either I wanted it to change because I didn't love it, or I had to love it exactly as it was and not want to exercise or get stronger. And so that's been a really, really interesting journey for me with that both and thing, that it can be, both can exist at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So thinking down this train of, you know, ambitions or big goals, and it can be related to anything work-wise or something else, what's something that is a big dream of yours? Something that you're either currently working toward or just dreaming and thinking about?
You know, I'm working right now in, there's a lot of like redefining happening. You know, we're in the midst of this big life change. And one of the roles that I'm wanting to step deeper into is like the role of a writer, like a professional writer, where I do a lot of writing for my work and my business, right? That's like 90% of my job is producing content. But I am kind of actively right now thinking, like, when I look at what's next, what's down the horizon, is to sort of bring that into the present in a more like professional way where I get paid to write things.
Mm-hmm. It's funny to hear you say that because I'm in exactly the same boat, that I have mm-hmm. done so much writing over the last decade, whether that's been, you know, on a previous blog or in the weekly emails that I send mm-hmm. to my Patreon community. Like there's so much writing, right? Like tiny books, other things. Yeah. And the thing that I have been thinking about and that I've realized, and I realized this a while ago, it's not a completely new realization, but a lot of the writing, or almost all of the writing that I do, feels very safe because it is only in front of a really supportive community, which is lovely. My community is great. And wanting to, like you said, take it to a more professional level. You know, I finished the first draft of a book that I'm working on, and obviously that will be on hold while I'm on the PCT, but like that, and potentially writing for other places and doing I had to sort of interrogate why I hadn't done that yet. And mm-hmm. a lot of it comes down to the fact that it feels much more safe and comfortable to write for an audience that already supports and likes you. And that it's right. like very scary to think about going in front of a totally different audience. And mm-hmm. once I realized that that's what the fear was, just naming that was like, okay, like that's fine to be afraid of that. And also I can do this anyway.
Right. Yes. And that's the whole key, right? Is being able to do it anyway.
Yeah, and not feeling like, oh, I have to wait until I don't feel this way in order to do something.
Right, because you'll never feel that way. I've had the experience, too, where I was asked a few years ago to write an article for a magazine, and I did not think that I was going to be paid for it. And so I'm really proud of what I wrote, but I approached it with a lightness where there was just a lot of joy in it and a lot of like curiosity, and I sort of gave myself open bounds in terms of what I was writing and how I was writing. It's really easy for me to like fall back into sort of day job corporate speak when there's money on the line or when I feel like I need to be professional. And it tends to water down my voice. But I wrote this article and then they mailed me a check later, which was great. But I was like, oh, well, that was kind of fun that I didn't freak out and panic, and I wasn't like an anxious mess trying to be a certain way because it was a professional gig, but then I also got paid for it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, how can I bring that energy into everything I do? And as I step in, now this is all coming together in my head now, right? Like during this conversation, but as I try to step into that new role, how can I still maintain that like openness and that curiosity and that connection to what I really want to say instead of trying to be a certain way.
Do you have any answers for yourself to that question?
Well, no. I mean, do we ever have the answers? I mean, I think that it's about, for me, where I've come back to all the time is that in order for me to really stay connected with who I am and my truth, it requires like a daily practice of coming back to myself.
Yeah. Can you say more about what you mean by that or what that looks like?
Yeah. And I know this is like the annoying answer because everyone's like, just tell me the three easy steps to stay connected to my deep soul work. And for me, I think a lot about like my work and the way that I work. My energy tends to be very cyclical. So I will have weeks or even months of like a lot of output where I wake up every morning and I write at 6 o'clock in the morning and I write for 45 minutes and I look back at it and I'm like, wow, that's great. And I feel really prolific. And then I also go through phases where I hardly write at all. And what I found is that the phases where I'm not writing at all are also the phases where I'm not moving my body a lot. I'm not meditating. I hesitate to use the phrase self-care because I feel like it's become such a thing, but I'm not taking care of myself in the way that is like nurturing my instrument, right? I think a lot about if someone's a trumpet player, but they never clean their trumpet and they don't put it in the case and they don't take care of it, it's not going to sound as good as it would if they were like lovingly taking care of their instrument. And so for us as creative people, we are our own instrument. And so we have to keep that instrument tuned. And for me, that part of it, that tuning and that ritual of coming back to myself and really staying grounded in who I am and what I want to say in my voice, it requires like a daily remembering that this is important and that it's a priority.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a relatively regular daily schedule that you try to keep to?
No. I wish I did. I want one. I was telling someone the other day, like, I wish that I was a person who could wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning and like meditate and exercise and journal and do all of and have like an hour to myself in the morning before my kids got up. And I am not. I'm sort of for the last like 2 or 3 years, I've been trying to get one. I have 4-year-old twins, so that's a thing. And right now we're actually in a big transition where we are in the process of moving and we're currently living with friends, staying in their basement. And so we're somewhat displaced. And so it's really, really hard to have that sort of ritual and regularity when you're displaced at the same time. This is when like it's more important than ever to have that. So I'm trying to, even in the midst of all of this chaos that is our lives right now, really come back to myself with these grounding rituals, which for me is like meditation, drawing a tarot card, doing some journaling, taking a walk ideally, eating breakfast, you know, it's not like I'm meditating for 90 minutes a day. I mean, I would like to get 7 minutes a day in. But it is, I would like to have a routine.
Yeah, I would too. I asked that from a very selfish place. At the time of this recording, I'm leaving for the PCT in like a week. So some of it is not really relevant because I will have a totally different routine on trail, right? Like that's its own thing. But I've been thinking a lot about what happens when I come back, especially because I see 2019 as a big business building year for me. It's been really lovely to grow the podcast organically and, you know, watch some of those things come to fruition more slowly and naturally. And now it feels like the right time to start to do other things. I started doing live events. I'm doing a retreat in January, you know, just some other things. And so with that in mind, and with the goals, like we were just talking about writing, that I'm looking at the puzzle piece of the day and I'm realizing, okay, I can't just be sort of this like haphazard, I don't know, fit. Or I guess it can be, but I don't feel my best when that's the case.
Yeah.
And so it's starting to strategically be like, okay, how do I want to move my body and what time of day does that feel good? Am I someone who's going to try to live by the do your most important work if that's writing first? Or does it actually make me feel better to spend an hour just doing administrative stuff so it's not, you know, eating away at the back of my brain? And there's no right answer, but I'm trying to ask myself these questions of, actually what works for me if I stop paying attention to what I've been told is supposed to work.
Right. And if you take out of the equation being reactive. And that for me is so much of my life is like with two young kids, I'm reacting to a lot. There are a lot of needs placed on me, which is as a parent, the role that I signed up for, and it's fine. But also I have to, like, my brain works better when I don't look at email first thing in the morning, when I don't look at social media first thing in the morning, when I can like deliberately set the tone for my day and then step into that. At the same time, though, it is so hard for me to actually follow through on that. And it's so hard for, I feel like where I am right now, like my daily challenge that I come back to is like, it's so hard for me to give priority to the things that I know are best for me.
Okay, say more about that. That's interesting.
Yeah, like when I make a list, and I've done this before and I've shared it on Instagram, and people are always like, oh my God, it's like such a revelation. And to say it out loud, it feels so basic, but I think that it's something that we're all challenged by or faced, or maybe not all of us. I don't know. Maybe you guys can let me know if you're like, no, everything's perfect in my life. not in mine. You know, when I make a list of the things that make me feel the best, it's moving my body, meditating, eating foods that come from the ground, you know, reading, having some sort of a spiritual practice, like not really consuming shit, whether it's emotionally or physically, having sex, having long meandering conversations with friends. And then when I make the list of the things that don't make me feel great, it's like obsessively checking email, being on social media all day, reading the news all the time, you know, things like that. And yet it's like those habits that are not serving us, which is a whole other thing, right? Are the ones that our brains, like our kind of monkey mind brains and our habits keep bringing us back to. And so for me, I'm really trying to look at, like, we're in the process of moving from Northern California to Colorado and kind of redesigning our lives. And I keep every morning, I'm like, okay, what would you wanted to do this and you're in the midst of it, start being that person that you wanted to be as you were envisioning this move.
Oh my God, that's so real. Okay, so tell me the why behind this move and this change for you.
So it started a few years ago. My husband is a big outdoors guy. And like 20 years ago, Outside Magazine this is back when people read magazines. Outside Magazine published a list of like the 20 best places to live in the United States. And Fort Collins, Colorado, which is where we've come now, was like number one for outdoor enthusiasts. And since then, right, like a bunch of people moved here 20 years ago, and now all of those people have had kids and settled down. And so it's this great outdoors place, but it also is really, really family oriented. And we were living in Northern California in the East Bay, right outside of San Francisco. And our lives were just really chaotic, really hectic. We lived in a tiny house, which was fine. But then we had twins. And so a 700 square foot house with four people and the dog started to get pretty crowded, especially once everybody started using the toilet. And there's traffic and the schools aren't great. And we sort of just were looking at like the scope of our lives. And we were like, why are we working so hard for this to be our lives? What if we could actively change it? Where would we want to go? And so we started having the conversation like 3 years ago about, would we want to move? What would that look like? It was hard in a lot of ways. And, you know, for me, I've lived in the Bay Area past tense for 17 years. And so that was sort of where I had lived my entire adult life. But it was also, as we looked at like, what do we want our lives to look like in 5 years? There was an ease that we were craving that we weren't getting in the Bay Area, and that we didn't want to strive to get there, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it totally makes sense. What are some things that you two had to do in order to make this change realistically possible?
Oh gosh. We had to talk, you know, I think we had to talk about it a lot with each other. It was really important for us. And I feel really fortunate that my husband and I are like on the same page with the things we want. because I know that sometimes couples are not. And so that made it really easy that we were kind of in alignment when we looked at the big vision and what was most important to us. But that was definitely something. And even now with finding a house here and all of that, we started with the conversation of like, because I'm a coach, I'm always like, what's your vision? And so we started with a conversation of like, what's your vision and what are the things that are most important for you to have? And that was a really, really good way to start because it let us, like, it made priorities clear. And so anytime there was like a backpedaling or a question mark, I would be able to say to Tim, like, I thought it was really important to you that we had this. So now you're telling me something different, which is fine. But like, did you change your mind? Or is there some other factor that we want to consider? So we did that a lot. We looked at financials a lot. And because right now my husband is not working, he's kind of full-time dad, which is amazing. But that's a whole other leap and a whole other set of circumstances to communicate around, right? Like I just feel like we are like right now, like massive over communicators, because my thing is like, let's talk about everything. Because I think as a couple, when you stop saying things out loud, that's when resentment can happen.
Mm-hmm.
But then there is also the like, telling our friends, our family. She still does. She lives in California. So that was really challenging, right? Like making it real was a whole other thing. And that was hard. It's hard to tell people like, hey, you're part of my life here, but we want a different life. So we're leaving, but we love you.
Yeah. I mean, and I think the same can be true for any life change that you're making that's more in alignment with whatever the future is that you're envisioning. There are people and things and stuff that in some respect get sort of left behind. And I think that's an often unacknowledged part of the change process. Like on one hand, moving from one state to a different state, like sure, people do that all the time, right? Like it's not a radical, revolutionary, never been done before change, right? For most folks. And there's still a lot that goes into it. Like I think back to moving to Bend, which was a relatively impulsive decision for Paul and I. And just like thinking back on that, I was pretty unhappy the first like year and a half that we lived here because we didn't know anyone when we moved here. And it takes time for somewhere to feel like home and to make friends and have experiencing winter for the first time in a really long time. And so it's like, even I think that's another piece too that doesn't get talked about enough. And we're talking about it in the context of moving, but I think it's true for any change. Even if the change is something that you do want and that you are choosing and that you're working hard to make a reality, it still sucks sometimes. Yeah. There's still like really hard elements of it, you know?
Yeah. And I experienced that too when I quit drinking, which has happened since our previous conversation. But the shifting in all of the relationships, right? And having to redefine like who you are in all of these different situations. And all of a sudden you're not invited to certain things and, you know, and because of this decision you've made, and it's like, you're grounded in the decision and it's the right, you can know that it's the right thing and still be like, wait a minute, I didn't know I was signing up for all of this too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. So on this subject of change, you said something on Instagram a while back that I personally would love to hear more about. You said, every big turning point in my life and career has come from me making a choice to do things drastically different. Big shifts almost always require big shifts. Can you talk about that? Maybe like give a few examples, because I agree completely and I would love to hear more.
Yeah. I mean, it's, let me think about what some of those have been. I remember one that stands out really vividly. This has nothing to do with my professional life, but in my early 20s, I dated this horrible man, which, you know, probably not alone in that. And we lived together, and it was a sad time in my life. I think I was probably depressed. I was definitely self-medicating a lot with alcohol. It was that thing where you were like, just everything's fine, just keep going. But that voice in the back of my head was like, how are you going to get out of this? Right. Cause we lived together and he was I'd say controlling and probably fairly manipulative. And I was codependent, so I let it happen and wasn't very good at standing up for myself. And I had a moment, we had a moment, we were living in a house together, and our landlord emailed me and said that she wanted to sell our house and that we needed to move out, and our lease was up. And I, in that moment, and part of it's right, seizing opportunity that when it comes your way and then letting that be the catalyst for that big drastic change. But I came home and I was like, hey, we got this email. And he was like, oh, okay, well, where do you think we should move? And I said to him, I was like, well, I think that I need to move into San Francisco and live by myself, because I had never lived by myself. I had gone from, when I moved to Northern California, I moved in with my mother, and then I went from living with my mother to living with this guy. And I always knew, like, no, you need to go live by yourself. And I also knew that it was the only thing that was going to get me out of this relationship, that he was the kind of person who would, like, be in an unhappy relationship for the rest of his life and be fine with it. But I knew that, like, I would rather have the alternative of no relationship and being really lonely. And it was really lonely than being with him forever, because that's like a different kind of loneliness. It's like this long-term soul crushing loneliness. And so that was like, we stayed together, but only for a few months, right? That was sort of the beginning of the end. And it was really hard at first, because I had never lived by myself and I didn't know anybody in San Francisco. I worked in the East Bay. All of my friends were in the East Bay. So I sort of like came to the city and was like, what do I do now? But when I look back on that, it was one of the most powerful choices that I could have made. And part of what did it, right, was just saying that one sentence out loud.
Yeah, you're hitting on something that has been on my mind a lot lately, that so often we are stuck in that place of like, I don't know what to do, which I think for the most part is bullshit. Yeah. I think we often do know what we want or what needs to be done. There's just fear around the how. Yes. Or about what's going to happen next or actually doing it. And I had this realization, a couple of months ago, that almost anything that needs to be said, like some of the most life-changing things, happen in 5 words. Yes. Or less. That like, and not to say that it's that easy, but it is that simple, right? For you to say, I think I should live on my own, yeah, right? Like, we should break up. I love you. Will you marry me?
Yeah.
And those are just relationship things, but that's true. You know, quitting a job, doing anything, like the actual act of doing it, it's like 20 seconds of bravery in that mm-hmm. moment of you say the thing and then it can't be unsaid and you have said the thing.
Yeah.
And that it's like, it is that simple and not that easy. And this idea that you are speaking to about that, like, big shifts pretty much always require big shifts. It's like, the thing that I don't want to be true, that is always true, is that you can't change your life without changing yeah. your life, which I know that you and I yeah. have talked about before. And it's like, it like sounds so simple when you say it out loud, but if I want something that's different, it doesn't necessarily have to mean burn your entire life to the ground dramatically and start over, but something tangible has to be significantly different in order for you to be living a different life in some capacity. And like, that is hard, like, period, yeah. full stop. That's hard.
Yeah. You know? It's like, we hate our house. And so we spend all of our time researching paint colors because that feels like the least disruptive, most, you know, socially acceptable way of fixing where we live. But really the issue is that we live by the highway and there's always traffic and we want to live in a small town, but there are 8 million people where we live and it takes forever to get anywhere and people are kind of assholes and all of this. But like, instead of just saying the truth of it and then seeing what comes and trusting that you'll figure it out, we sort of distract ourselves with following interior designers on Instagram and buying pillows. Right. And I think that it's like we're afraid of the disruption, but I just find that most people are so much more capable than they acknowledge. And the disruption, it's like, would you rather live your whole life with like a low grade depression or have the, in the moment, big, huge mess. But then you get you climb your way out of it really deliberately. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, look at where I am now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, so a running theme, I think, of what we're talking about is this idea of the fact that we often know what we want and need to do. We just aren't doing it, right? Which I think is universally relatable. I would be shocked if there's anyone that's like, that's never happened to me. I don't understand. If so, tell me all your magic secrets. But so it sounds obviously like that's something that you can relate to. What helps like move you into action when you're feeling stuck in that place of knowing what needs to be done or knowing what you want to do, but you just aren't doing
it. So I'm like a classic obliger. If you are familiar with Gretchen Rubin's Four Tendencies, which the obliger is the person who is not internally motivated. Like it's hard for me. I'm not like I'm going to get up and go to the gym because it makes me feel good. I'm working on that. I'm trying to become that person. So for me, I do really well with like external accountability. So when I decided to quit drinking for good, I immediately talked about it on Instagram because I was like, well, if I tell thousands of people about this, I'm a lot more likely to follow through than if I just think about it for myself. Mm-hmm. So even things like paying money for things, right? I'm a lot more likely to follow through if I sign up for monthly Pilates classes. Like if I know that there's money on the table, I'm a lot more likely to go than if it's like, oh, I'll just go when I feel like it. So that's one thing. I do a lot of hindsight looking at things and just trying to look at like at the end of the day, if I'm feeling really good, it's like, all right, what happened today that makes me feel really good? And then I'll try to like acknowledge those things or write them down. At the end of the day, if I'm feeling really drained, what was going on today that made me feel drained? And then I try to carry that through to the next day and remember that. It's hard, you know, and in that book, have you read that book? The Habit book? It's yellow.
You know that? Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Power of Habit.
In that, one of the biggest revelations I had reading that book was that willpower has, like, there's a finite amount of it for us as humans. And so I also do what I can to, like, simplify my day-to-day so that, you know, I don't have to burn my decision power on, like, getting dressed or doing my hair. Or, like, I try to really simplify. I'm trying to become a minimalist, but it's more about just, like, simplifying the everyday choices so that I have the energy to focus on the big things that are going to move me forward or help me feel the best.
So on this subject of change, you've obviously given a couple of examples, leaving that relationship, quitting drinking, now the move to Colorado. I want to talk a little bit about fear as it relates to change. Can you remember a change that you made in your life that leading up to it, you felt really fearful of making the change?
All of them. I mean,
is there anything in particular that was like felt very fear drenched for you?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I really all of them. But like quitting drinking was one that I wasn't afraid of quitting drinking, but I was afraid of like I remember I was really afraid to have the conversation with my husband. So when I quit drinking, I decided to quit drinking for a year as an experiment. And I even remember when I had you on my podcast and we talked about quitting drinking, even then, and I don't know if I said it, but even then I was like almost doing the interview as a way to like get myself ready to quit drinking because I knew it was something I needed to do. But I decided to quit drinking as a year-long experiment. And about 3 weeks in, I was like, oh, my life is exponentially better without alcohol in it. This needs to become a permanent change. And I was really nervous to tell my husband that I had decided to quit drinking forever because I was afraid that it like made me weak or that it meant that I had like quote unquote a problem. And I am such like I've got everything. I've got it. No, I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. Right. I'm like that. As Anne Lamott says, like the flight attendant to the world. And there is this way of showing up. I think that we, as like a vulnerability thing, right? Where I've always taken pride in like being the person who's on it. So for me to then come out and say like, yeah, I think that I, as I like to say, don't have a healthy relationship with alcohol was really scary. And he took it so, I mean, he was amazing and so supportive and fantastic about it. But I really obsessed about that. So it was, yeah.
Yeah, there's a couple things in there that I want to underscore. First, this idea, I think that it's really common when we're considering some kind of change to be fearful about how the people in our lives are going to react. And I think that the truth is some people won't react well, and that's fine. And you might lose people. Like I definitely lost friends when I quit drinking, for example. And that the opposite of that is more often than not true. Like that you're, like you said, your husband was great and super supportive. And something that I have to remind myself of is I will often, from a fear place, play out the way that I think a conversation is going to go with someone, and that it's very doomsday, worst case scenario. And in doing that, I'm not giving the other person a chance to actually show up and have their own reaction, yeah. Right? That it's like, I guess give people the benefit of the doubt more. Like, what if I just say what needs to be said and say what's true for me, and then actually give the other person space to respond and react and give them a little bit more credit, I think.
Yes.
And so hearing you speak to that, I think is awesome, because for the most part, people who love us want us to do the things that are going to be best for us. And you know what I mean? Like that they're supportive, not always, but a lot of the time. And also what you were saying about being fearful about, you know, what it would mean about you to quit drinking. I mean, I think that, and that's come up on the podcast before in other like conversations about sobriety, that problem lies with the way that we culturally talk about and think about alcohol, yeah. That it is seen as, it's like the, it's drug use that is so normalized that the only justification for quitting is if you're an alcoholic and have like this horrible problem and you can't use drugs, use this drug normally, whatever that means, that like, which is highly problematic on its own. Like it's fine. It should be totally fine for you to opt out of something just because it doesn't make you feel good. Right? Like there's nothing, like you're not weak because you can't consume drugs at a normal pace or whatever. Like the whole thing is it's so messed up.
Right. But it's yeah. Where like the controversial thing is that you're not consuming alcohol. Right. And everyone's like, oh, how could you? And it's like, oh, my God, just leave. Like you would never be even, I mean, a healthy person would never like, I would never be like, you aren't doing heroin. What's wrong with you?
Yeah, I think about that too. And but that's why I think that it's so important for people like you to tell your story. And I think there's definitely some similarities when it comes to drinking in our stories, that because not that, more, let's say, extreme alcohol abuse stories aren't also relevant, and everyone's story deserves to be told. But I think so much of what we hear and like the recovery memoirs, they are the kind of I woke up in the gutter and didn't remember the last 3 days types of stories, that it's easy then to think that that's the only reason to quit. And hearing more people like you say, you know what, I just like didn't really like what this was doing for me. I don't really feel like I have a super healthy relationship with this. I feel better without it. I think that gives people sort of the comfort and the sigh of relief to be like, okay, I'm not alone and it's fine for me to opt out of this, even if I don't have like a capital P problem, however we define it.
Right. And that's something that as I think about what's next for me, like I want to step farther into that advocacy role for people to know that there is a different way than like just white knuckling your way through a relationship with alcohol. You know, and I think that it's not commonly talked about in that way. And so that is something that I want to step farther into is talking about that and sharing that story. And to something else you brought up in terms of the way that we are afraid of other people's reactions, or like that we don't put our faith in other people to like do the right thing. We are right now in the process of, I mean, hopefully by the time this airs, we will have moved into the house, but we're in the process of buying a house and we're getting the mortgage because my husband's not working right now. It's all based on my financials and the financials of my business, which is like super badass in one respect and also incredibly anxiety inducing. In the other hand, and I have had so much anxiety about the loan and the mortgage going through, and what if they come back on the day that we're supposed to get the keys and they're like, nope, we're taking it away and all of this. And I finally had a moment last week where I was like, hey, maybe instead of trying to come up with all of these doomsday scenarios, you trust that the person who is securing your loan is capable of doing his job. Mm-hmm. And that he wouldn't have told you yes every step of the way if it wasn't true. And it's this way of, do you know Janelle Hanchett? Oh, no. My God. You have to have her on. You are going to love. I'll get you guys connected when you get back from the PCT. Let me know. She's amazing. You've got to read her book. She wrote a memoir called I'm Just Happy to Be Here. She writes a blog called Renegade Mothering. She's incredible. Oh, my God, you're going to die. She's the best. But so Janelle Hanchett is this person who is like my hero in truth telling. And I had her on my podcast recently, and she talked about this concept that kind of blew my mind. And we were talking about fear and like fear of saying things out loud that would affect other people. And she was like, yeah, so what we're doing when we do that is we're putting our faith into our fear. And I had never heard anyone talk about it that way, but like when we give in to the fear, we are actually saying that like we trust our fear to be the authority above all else. And I asked her, like, well, what should we put our faith into instead? And she said, well, just put your faith in the truth. And it like turned everything around for me. Cause even with this whole situation with the mortgage, it was like, well, the truth of the matter is that everything's fine. And if it wasn't, someone would have told you by now. So I just think that's like it was a really helpful reframe for me to be able to sleep at night.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and that was going to be one of my questions is, you know, some really like practical things that work for you in terms of handling the fear that naturally occurs during the change process. Is there anything else that you can think of?
Yeah, I was in London last week for a speaking gig, and I was having trouble sleeping because of like anxiety and also jet lag. And so I got up in the middle of the night. And for me, like if my brain is spinning, trying to just ignore it and go back to sleep doesn't work. So what is most effective for me is to actually get up and do some writing or get up and do like a body scan meditation, but something to like actively get myself out of that, you know, Mac spinning wheel of death that we all see on our computers. So I actually got up, and I'd never done this before, but it was super helpful. I got up and I wrote a letter to my anxiety, and it started out being very like soothing and comforting and like a mothering, where I was like, dear anxiety, I just want you to know that everything's fine. And here are all the reasons that I know everything's fine and da, 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 da. And the more that I wrote, I think it ended up being like a 3-page letter, the more pissed off I got. And so by the end of it, I was like, also, fuck you, because I am capable and I am strong and I've worked really hard. And the picture that reality paints is that everything's fine and all of these things I can worry about, I can handle no problem, because not only am I capable, but I've been preparing for this and I am a person who shows up in integrity and all of that. And letting myself get angry about it ended up being really, really powerful. And so now I can almost look at my anxiety as like a bully, right? And be like, psh, you're lying. I don't have to listen to you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The talk that you gave in London, it was a keynote, right? Mm-hmm, for a conference. Mm-hmm. Can you share what you taught about?
Yeah. It was about, so it was a conference called Blogtacular. And if any of y'all are over in Europe, it's an amazing conference and was so wonderful. Like, the most lovely people. So I did the opening keynote and I talked about kind of what I'm seeing as like the new trends in kind of staying on your creative edge and also creating work that's sustainable, like sustainable and successful. And so I talked about, I had a list of 10 things that I thought people should know. One of them was that like, burnout isn't the way forward anymore. I think for so long, we were all pushing like, you got to hustle and you got to hustle harder and you got to just show up and get the work done and all of that. And what I'm finding with conversations that I'm having with friends and then with people on the podcast is a lot of people who tried that way, like found themselves completely burnt out. And all of a sudden are like, wait a minute, there has to be a better way. So that was one piece. But really, it was sort of about how to, and this is something I'm always interested in teaching and trying to help people with, is like, how can you be successful and own your creative voice, but do it in a way that is completely authentic? And I know that word gets thrown around a lot, but that is like resonant with who you are as a person and that depth of your soul, rather than just trying to be the next fill in the blank.
So this idea of, you know, not relying on the cycle of hustle and burnout and making things that are more sustainable. Can you share a change or two that you've made over the years or perhaps recently in your business to make it more sustainable? Like, what's that actually look like? Because I think that this is one of those topics that everyone would hear it and be like, oh yeah, sure. Like, burnout does not feel good, right? That's not the way that I want to work. And then again, coming back to the change process, like, well, if you want something to shift, something actually has to shift. Yeah. And that means that you have to do things differently. Yeah. And okay, right? So can you share about that?
So about a year ago, I like let go of probably like $50,000 or $60,000 of revenue generating programs, which at the time like made perfect sense. And then like a week later, I was like, oh my God, what have I done? But it was, I was teaching a couple of classes with other people that, when I looked at the long-term scope of what I wanted to do and the way that I worked best, like I knew that I was ready to move on from them. And it, part of it had to do with timing. Part of it had to do with me kind of feeling called to teach some other things and teach in other ways. But at the same time, right, me being an obliger, if I am being accountable to somebody else, I'm going to put that first over my own things. And so what I was doing was I was in these collaborations and I was giving all of those, all of my energy, and kind of the things that I wanted to move forward were falling to the wayside. So what that created was this really unsustainable pattern where I didn't have a lot of energy to focus on my own things, but those were the things that sort of got me up in the morning. And so I was trying to figure out a way to balance all of them and juggle all of them and make it all work. And what I really realized was like, it is time to let that go. It is time to sort of step into this next thing and go deeper into the things that you want to be talking about. So for me, it really like in the big picture thing, I kind of completely rearranged my business in terms of the brand didn't really change. And I think a lot of people on the outside, like maybe didn't even notice, but I kind of completely shifted the way that I brought in revenue and the things that I was teaching. But also in like the really kind of zoomed in way, I still do this. I look at everything I'm doing and I say, how does this make me feel? And if the answer is not good, the answer is like, this makes me feel like shit. Then I look at, do I need to do it? Do I really have to do it? Because we have a lot of things that we say we have to do that we don't. Can I get help on it? Or can it take a different form? Is there something I could shift about it that would make it feel better?
Yeah, I love that you're speaking to this, because something that I wish was talked about more and more openly and honestly is this idea that for the most part, I think it's a relatively easy to walk away from something that really sucks. And I'm not necessarily talking about, you know, abusive situations or really oppressive situations outside of, you know, the extremes of those things. If something is just like really not good, I think that it's a lot simpler to walk away from it. But I think that it's very challenging to walk away from something that's good but not great. Yes. And so hearing you speak to, you were doing, you know, you were teaching programs and like courses with fellow creatives who you respect, who I know are your friends. They were successful. You know, it's not like, oh, I walked away from something because it wasn't making any money, right? Yeah. Like they were financially successful. It was a part of your brand. It was probably relatively smooth sailing in terms of, well, we've done it before, so if we just run it again, it's sort of like a guaranteed income type of situation. And so to be able to walk away from all of those good things because they're good but not great, or good but not where you want to be going, I think that that's an incredibly brave thing to do. And hearing you talk about that, it's like such a necessary reminder, I think, that we have permission to change our lives because we want to change our lives. It's like, I look at times in the past, either relationships, like romantic relationships or jobs or things where I made it so bad for myself in order to then give myself permission to leave. Like I had to wait until the situation was so awful that leaving, you know, like all the bridges were burned, everything was a fucking hot mess. So then of course I would leave. And how much more I want to be the person who's like, this is just no longer the right fit. This isn't serving me. Can I move on gracefully instead of having to like burn it to the ground in order to give myself permission to change? Like just because you want to change is enough of a reason to change.
Yeah. And that, you know, it's like the universe will keep sending us signs and they'll just get louder and louder until we finally pay attention. And so what if we, and this is something I'm trying to really do with that whole like daily ritual of tapping back into myself and my truth, is paying attention to those signs and those nudges when they're so quiet rather than when like your entire life falls apart.
So what's one of the things that's next for you in terms of the things that you want to teach on? Like what's a subject that there's feeling like a lot of fire around that you're excited about?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I'm all, you know, it's interesting too, because like you said, there's all these things that look good on paper that are hard to walk away from. And so I keep, even with one of the classes that I let go of, it was a branding class. And I really like teaching branding, and I was kind of ready to move on from it, but it's that sort of keeps popping back up, and I keep being like, oh hi, what are you doing here? Maybe you can come back. But I'm really, really having to figure out, like, with everything I'm doing, I'm really having to ask the question, like, is this coming from a place of love or is it coming from a place of fear? Because I think especially when you have a business, it's easy to make decisions that are based in fear even without realizing it. So that's something that I'm super aware of. And it's something that I'm starting to teach more, is like how other people can more deeply connect with their creativity and set up action plans and apply strategy based on their intuition, and based on the things they really want to say, rather than basing things on how to build your list, right? Like when people come to me and they're like, can you help me with list building? I'm like, well, yes, but also first we need to answer a whole bunch of questions, because what I've found in my own experience and with people I've worked with is that like the list size is not really the problem, but that's the put paint on the walls solution that's really easy to focus on. And the people who tell you that you need to grow your list are really good at setting up compelling reasons. And I think it's important to have an email. I mean, that's a whole other conversation. But so I'm really, really trying to sort of disrupt the way that we all approach certain things so that people can find a better way forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You mentioned when you were talking about the keynote that you gave in London, staying on your creative edge, and that phrase kind of like stuck in my mind. What do you mean by that?
I mean like being willing to take risks, being willing to say things out loud that may not be popular or may not be the status quo. You know, it's like there's that saying in kind of the art world of like, by the time like somebody copying you means you've made it. And by the time somebody copies something you've done, you might already be onto the next three things. Mm-hmm. So like let them copy last year's version of whatever, right? And not that that ever feels good, because it doesn't. But I've heard people say that. And so it's that way of like, when I first mapped out this revenue model where I was doing these collaborations and everything was working, in my mind, I really, really wanted to have things figured out, right? I wanted to know. I wanted the certainty of knowing, like, this is what I offer every year, and this is when it rolls out, and this is how long it is, and I can map out my entire calendar for the year and know exactly what's happening and exactly where things are going to fall into place. And I did that for 3 years, and that thing that I was so craving at the time started to become really stifling. It did not represent freedom, and I was ready to sort of move on to the next thing and evolve, which is what we do as humans. And so I think that is the creative edge. And so sometimes the thing we're ready to move on from used to represent the creative edge, right? But like, we're ready to go farther.
Yeah. And I think that that has a lot to do with building a sustainable business. For me, at least, it needs to be a business that allows for change and evolution. Like things that I have done in the past, especially when it was more lifestyle brand related and really tied into my sort of like personal habits and choices and stuff. Then as I started to change, I felt like, oh, okay, well, this business can't change with me. And that didn't feel, that was the main reason that I wrapped up my previous business, is because I didn't want whether or not I made money to be related to whether or not I'm running, whether or not I'm vegan, whether or not like any of these personal choices. And so a lot of the, like I mentioned before, that the sort of evolution of the current business model has been slow. And a lot of that is because I've been really intentional along the way of not making that mistake again. And like, I think what you're speaking to, it's it like makes a lot of sense. And it's a really good reminder of, for something to be sustainable, whatever it is, whether it's, you know, a friendship or a hobby or your business that you're building or whatever, that there has to be room for change somewhere, and whatever that looks like for you.
And for me, I was finding myself, I mean, really burnt out. I was getting sick a lot. I was not super, like I was sort of like, I don't know. Like I wasn't necessarily looking forward to things. And it also became when I started looking at like, okay, 5 years from now. I mean, I ask people this all the time, 5 years from now, what do you want your life to look like? And I had the thought like, oh my God, if I'm still doing this in 5 years, I just need to go get a job. Like I just need to go find a job. And that wasn't like, that to me was a wake up call of like, hold on, you love your people, you love your collaborators. Like there is a better way forward than dragging this out until you feel that way.
So what do you want your life to look like in 5 years?
I love that question. You know, there's a lot of like expansion. Part of it is I want to be doing the work that I'm doing, but I also want a lot of like empty space in my lives, where there is room to like live my life. I find that going out into the world and having interesting experiences completely makes my work thrive. So it's not about like being on the computer 8 hours a day. And so I'm really looking at how can I design my workflow so that I can show up and be in integrity and get things done that need to get done. And also like work, quote unquote work, like computer desk work, you know, a couple hours a day and that's it. And then
I totally agree with you of the like going out into the world, having interesting experiences that winds up, especially like as a creative, right? Like reinforming the work for sure. Are there any specific things, I mean, for lack of a better phrase, like on your bucket list as far as interesting experiences or things that you would love to, I don't know, do or try in the next few years?
I mean, part of it is just becoming that person who honors her own needs first, right? So like part of it, and this doesn't sound very sexy, that like one of the things on my bucket list is to create and maintain like a ritual. but that actually feels really, really important because I feel like being able to do that will then actually help me accomplish those bigger things. But definitely a lot of travel. You know, I want to do a lot of travel. I would love to go on like a silent meditation retreat. I think that would be amazing. There are certain people that I want to learn from or be in the room with.
I feel the same way. Yeah, that's well said. Yeah.
We have kind of a family plan. Part of what precipitated this move is we have this vision of every summer going to live in a different country for at least a month, up to 3 months. You know, and that's something that I don't want to just talk about. Like, I actually want to do. So many people, when we told them we were moving to Colorado, said, and I found this shocking, but so many people were like, oh, you've been talking about that for years. I didn't think you'd actually do it. And I was like, wow, I think that's so common that we all talk about these things that we want, but they never happen. And I want to actually do them.
Yeah, Yeah, I think about that a lot. Not that I want to necessarily rush things. I think sometimes things, especially certain things more than others, take time. And to sort of shorten that gap between the thing that I say that I want and then when I'm actually taking at least like some experimental steps on it. And
yes.
So pivoting a little bit, tell me about the Instagram project that you are doing this year, your A Year of Truth Talks project.
Yeah, so my Year of Truth Talks. So back in 2015, I did a daily Instagram project for a year that was called hashtag post it daily. And the when I started it, I kind of wanted just a non-precious creative project. And I am all about like bold declaration. So no 100-day project for me. I'm going to do it for a whole year. And when I started the project back in 2015, I thought that I was going to be doing like doodles on a post-it. Like I thought that I needed to become better at drawing, which is not my strong suit. And I'm fine with that because my words are my art. And it quickly became like almost like a little pep talk or a little glimpse into my life where I would write words on a post-it and post it every day. And I loved that project, and I love the challenge of like not knowing what you're going to say and then figuring something out. And I think that that's so useful for all of us. But then I needed a 2-year break from a daily project because it was a lot. By the end of it, I was like, I'm so tired of this. And so this year, back in December, I was like, okay, I want to do something. I'm always, again, trying to like stay on my creative edge because part of my job is to model that for the people in my audience and for my students is to say like, I don't know what I'm going to say every day, but I'm going to commit to this. And then you guys can watch it play out in real time. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, what do I do? Because I wanted to do something written, but I wanted it to be not too restrictive. Like I didn't just want to do post-its because by the end of that project, it was like, how many more creative ways can you photograph a post-it? And so I thought about doing pep talks, but I was like, there's something deeper that I want to be talking about. And that's where I came up with the idea of A Year of Truth Talks. And so they're anything from like things that I want to say to people to things, they're almost always based on things that I experience in my own life. And a lot of times they're like things that I think are hard to say out loud and or hard to hear for people.
Yeah. Can you give a couple examples?
Yeah. One that people didn't love was I put one up that said something like, this might be controversial, something about like, like something we all want to say out loud is that like nobody really cares about your dream and they're not as interested in your kids as you think they are. Which I got a little pushback for that. But it's the right. It's like we've all been in that conversation where someone's like, I had this dream last night. And then like 30 minutes later, they're still talking about it. And you're like, just get to the punchline. What did Ben Affleck say to you that made you so angry? You know, so it's could be something like that. But also one of them I posted recently that I think resonated a lot was just I said, like, your anxiety is lying to you. That's like, oh, okay. So I don't have to listen to that. Or I think I do a lot of permission giving that like the thing that you are allowed to do in your life to stay sane, like may not look like what everybody else is doing or what everybody else says they're doing, but like, that's okay too. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a lot of like, hey, this is my life. I'll post things every now and then. That's like what she says, I'm fine. But what she means is I said something one day about like, I feel lonely and never alone all at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I'm really interested in this subject of truth telling. I mean, obviously, it's like the underpinning of a lot of my work or all of my work. And this sort of difference between telling the truth about your life versus telling the truth about your life as long as it will be well received. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that those are the same. And yet I think that that's difficult to do, right? And I mean, I think privacy is excellent and necessary, and it's really up to each individual person how much of their truth they share with anyone in their life, right? It's not like, sure. Like I don't think there's a badge of honor for like, you have to go on Instagram and say like the truest things all the time, right? Like, and yeah. I don't hear that being what you're advocating for either. It's just that this works for you. But the thing that I think fundamentally is so important is telling yourself the truth. Like whether you tell anyone else, whether you decide to do anything about it or not, I think that there's something very empowering and necessary about like sort of developing the practice of not lying to yourself, which again, I think is easier said than done. But I'm curious for you, what's helped you to learn how to tell yourself the real truth?
Journaling has helped a lot. And I used to always roll my eyes when people would be like, you should journal. I'd be like, I don't have time to journal. But journaling has helped a lot. Meditating has helped a lot. Like doing that practice and that ritual of like meditating and then journaling and at least getting the thoughts on paper and seeing what comes up. That's helped a ton. Also those, like going back to that thing of in the relationship when I said I need to move out and live by myself, right? It's those words tumble out in an exhale. And I think so many of us don't even realize we're holding our breaths. So letting yourself do the thing that you need to do so that you can breathe. And often if I'm feeling really stuck, I'll even take my journal and for me, like writing with a pen makes a huge difference than like being on the computer. Anytime that I can get off the computer, it's just so good for my brain and my body. But, you know, I'll just take my journal and write like, what are you most afraid of right now? And it's so powerful to acknowledge that, but it also is like, it takes the power away from your thoughts, right? So it almost like once you write it out, for me, what it always comes down to is like, I'm most afraid of an uncomfortable conversation. So what if I decide to not let that be scary? Then what?
Yeah, with the journaling, because I agree, a lot of people say that that's their practice or, you know, you hear that all the time. And I think that it's easy advice to ignore, partially because it's like, okay, well, what do I do? Like I have a journal. Like I think people want to know like what to do. So what does your process look like? Do you have specific questions that you ask yourself? Is it like a free form, you know, you just brain dump or like for you, what works?
Yeah. I do. Yes. All of that. And so for me, it's about not trying to make it look a certain way. So I will, and I've tried a lot of different journaling techniques. I've tried morning pages. I've tried, you know, answering prompts and things like that. What works for me right now in this moment, and it will change. And I think it's actually really important that everybody find their own way, but also you've got to start somewhere. So I do a few different things. I will journal after I meditate, but I give myself permission to like write bullet points or to see what comes up, right? Like I'm not like, dear diary, today, and I don't actually write recaps of my day. So I'm not like, today I felt sad and blah, 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 and this is what I did. I'm not that kind of, I've always tried to do that on trips and stuff, and that's not, it just never feels satisfying. But writing bullet points of like, here's what I want to remember, that's super helpful, or here's what I learned. I also do a thing, not every night, but a lot of nights, especially if I have thoughts in my head that I need to get out, is I will write a to-do list for the universe. So I'll kind of be like, here are the things that I want to happen that I want the universe to handle while I sleep. And I call it my universe ta-da list. And it's a really nice way of just sort of like getting the thoughts out of my head and getting them down on paper. And sometimes it'll be small things like find someone to paint our house. But sometimes it'll be big things like book deal. And it's just sort of, it helps me relax. I also do a lot of like, when I listen to a podcast, I have my journal out with me. I do a bullet journaling system. So I just have like a notebook that's sort of my planner and journal and everything. But I'll write down, I really like to write down quotes from sermons, from like religious sermons, because I find that the way that the people who really resonate with me speak, it's very poetic. And so I will actually like sit down and like transcribe sections of sermons that I'm listening to. And I find that really soothing and relaxing.
So interesting. I love the idea of the universe to-do list, especially. I've never heard anyone talk about that. It's very clever. Yeah.
I got it from my friend Anne Shen, who she writes, you should talk to her too. She's also amazing. She wrote the book Bad Gals Throughout History. You've probably seen it. It's pink. And she illustrated it, and it's all over the place now. But she learned it from one of her art school professors.
It's nice because, it, like you said, it gets the ideas out of your head and also sort of reinforces the idea that you cannot control all the things.
Yes.
Yeah, which, like, obviously, right? But so in this realm of truth-telling and telling yourself the truth, what's been one of the tougher truths for you to acknowledge and accept lately?
I think that, and this has come up a few times in this conversation, right? That my desire to want something is not enough to make it happen. That, like, I need to sort of, like, radically shift the way that I'm showing up in my life in order to have the life that I really want. Mm-hmm. And that is especially because I feel like I've done a lot of the work in my life, right? Like, I've made a lot of these radical shifts. And so you get to the point where you're like, can I just be done?
Yeah.
Because I'm tired. And at the same time, I know that once again, and this is how I felt with all of these big shifts I've made throughout my life, that, like, what I want next is on the other side of this change.
And when you say this change, what do you mean?
I think for me, what's coming up right now is this idea of really deliberately designing the individual days of my life instead of looking at that great big grand picture.
Ooh, okay. I'm very interested in this. Say more about that. Or can you share, like, what is the vision of the specific days? Because I think it's in the specifics where things sort of fall apart, or, like, it's relatively easy to sort of describe overall a vision for a lovely life, or, you know, what you want to be doing in 5 years. And yet it's like, okay, but the day to day, that's why there's so much power in, like, asking yourself, okay, all the things that I did today, if I kept doing these things for the next, you know, 365 days, would that get me where I want to be? If not, like, that the change has to happen on a day to day level. So I'm super curious to hear more about the specifics of your vision.
Okay. So when I think about my perfect day, and I'm going to call this, like, well, I'm not even going to do perfect day. I'm going to do perfect week, because that is also kind of included in this vision. So perfect week is, you know, Monday through Thursday are, like, my quote unquote work days, where I'm actively engaged with my business, and either teaching or creating content for that or showing up in some way. And so on those days, I wake up at 6 o'clock. I wake up easily and with delight. And I do, like, my kind of self-care rituals. So I do my meditation, I draw a tarot card, I contemplate the day, I set intentions, I would ideally take my dog on a walk, and kind of am ready by 7 to sort of be in the mom zone, right? Like, make breakfast, have breakfast with my kids, help set them up for success with whatever their day looks like. And then, and really then start my quote unquote work day probably around 9:30, being dressed, being, like, ready to sort of be a presentable human being. I always say, like, I don't want to be embarrassed if someone knocks on my door unexpected. And then spend some time on the computer, do some stuff, but I'm not also, like, I check email twice a day. I don't look at Instagram all day. You know, things are kind of more planned out. I take a break in the middle of the day to eat lunch and exercise. Like, I love the idea of a Pilates class or going for a swim midday. And then I'm done by 4 o'clock and I can feel like I've wrapped up the day. I've done what I needed to do. I can make dinner for my family. I'm not, like, the phone gets put away. That's a huge thing for me, is always just trying to break that phone habit. So that's Monday through Thursday. Fridays, I work half a day, or I don't work on Fridays, or Fridays are kind of a family adventure day. And then I'm also really, really into the idea of a Sabbath. So on the weekends, at least one day on the weekends, like, no technology. You know, the phone, it's, you know, people need to reach me for emergencies, then they can, but, like, the phone gets put away. We go outside, we take a hike, we're in nature, we're, like, actively communing with ourselves and with the earth. And so that's sort of the, like, the rhythm that I'm trying to get into. And it's not the rhythm that I'm in now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Where does fun and pleasure factor into that for you? How do you think about that?
Yeah. I mean, I think that I ideally, right, that's infused into everything I do. And this is where that idea of coming at what I'm doing from a place of love rather than a place of fear becomes really important. So I love to cook. I don't love to cook when I'm exhausted or when I've used up all of my decision-making willpower for the day. And so then the thought of like what's for dinner just feels like this tremendous burden. But if I have energy and space to like come at it from a joyful place, I find cooking so fun and wonderful. And I do really like to prepare food for my family. It's like one of my love languages is like, come over, I'm going to cook for you. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that you have that too.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, right? With all of the things I described and even having boundaries around technology, like when I think about what makes me feel the best as a human being and my body, it's all of those things. And yet in the day to day, it's so easy. It's so easy for me to just like sit on my ass all day long and never get up and be like, I can't, I've got more to do. Da, 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 da. And it's sort of like we're letting the machines win. <that way.
So I'm always really curious whenever, and I mean, again, this is a totally selfish question because I think about this myself all the time, when someone's describing, you know, the life they want, the week they want, you know, anything like that, like you just so beautifully and honestly did, I'm always curious in the follow-up question of like, what's what I think of as like the domino change? Like what's the one specific thing that if you were to change it would lead you closer to that life? Like, because I think oftentimes when there's a mismatch between what we're currently doing and what we want to be doing, a lot of what feels overwhelming is it feels like it's a million different changes that have to get made, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. maybe is true or maybe not. And I've been trying to check myself on that to be like, okay, Nicole, but what's the one thing that if you were to do that either makes everything else easier or makes some of the things on the list irrelevant, right? Like whatever that looks like.
Right.
So what would a domino change be for you that leads into the life you just described?
Yeah. So I'm going to tell you mine, but then I want to know yours. I would love to, for everyone listening, I would love to hear theirs too, because I think this is so useful to know just what kind of tactical thing has helped people make these changes that they want to make in their lives. But I think for me, what comes up is going to bed earlier.
Interesting.
Is like at going like 9 o'clock, everything gets turned off. I do the thing where I often get really tired at night and I get too tired to like wash my face and brush my teeth. And so then I like put off washing my face and like I'm too tired to go to bed. So then I stay up late, which doesn't make any sense. And so I think for me, it's starting my wind down at like 9 p.m. So ideally by 10, I'm like in bed, lights out, and then I can get 8 hours of sleep.
The thing that's the most interesting to me about that answer is nothing in the week that you described had anything to do with bedtime. And so this is why this exercise is so helpful, right? To be like, oh, okay, like maybe that's the domino.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's yours?
Like a current one or what do you mean?
Yeah. What's the change right now that like you're seeking or what's one that has made a huge difference for you in the past?
Yeah, I love this question. It's an interesting time. I mean, obviously you and I are recording this before I leave for the PCT and, you know, mm-hmm. by the time it comes out, I'll already be out on trail, but it's an interesting time for me to think about change just because I feel like this like 4 month hike is just like this black hole, right? That I can't see past.
Yeah.
It's so big that it is a change in and of itself, right? Like it just brings with it its own rhythms. And so I don't really think that there's anything that I need to intentionally do while I'm out there, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? Like there, well, but actually I guess I could talk about that a little bit. Just, and this is a question that I have been asked since this isn't it's my longest hike, but it's not my first long hike. People have asked what I'm planning to do differently or what I've learned from sort of the past two hikes that I'm intentionally, you know, thinking about this time around. So I guess I can talk about that first and then, you know, maybe a more general answer. The number one thing that I would like to do or what the domino would be for this hike is taking better care of myself, particularly eating more. Like I didn't eat enough on my hike last year. And there were a couple of reasons for that, mostly because I am afraid to hike alone in the dark. It's not my favorite thing. And I hiked in the fall and there was not that much daylight. And so I was basically like hiking as much as I could to get from like between water sources and where I needed to go. So I wasn't taking that many breaks. I wasn't stretching that much. I wasn't giving myself time to like prepare enough food. And like that sort of deficit just like builds up. And I felt like crap, like most of the time. And so going into this, I'm like, I will have so much daylight, especially at the beginning, because it's like, you know, Northern Washington summer, light from like 5 a.m. to like 10 p.m. that I have plenty of time. I'm going to take breaks. Mm-hmm. I'm going to stretch. I'm going to do yoga. I'm going to eat a million. I'm taking supplements this year. Like that I'm like, I am going to take better care of myself. Like for some reason that means I have to quit the hike, like I am taking care of myself. So that's definitely the domino for that. But when I think about life, when I come back, I think for me, in envisioning what I want, the domino, which is less specific and tangible, I think, than yours about going to bed early, the domino that would make the biggest difference is deciding what it is that I am going to prioritize, especially when it comes to work, because I mm-hmm. think it's very easy when I don't know and I haven't decided what I'm going to be working on that day. That's when I do fall into the thing of, oh, I've been on email for 6 hours, or I'm on social media all day, or the path of least resistance of like reacting to other things is mm-hmm. very easy to fall into when I haven't said, oh, this is the project or the two projects that are most important for this quarter. Here's what that looks like on a monthly basis. Right. Here's what that looks like on a weekly basis. And so there's just like some project management stuff that will have to happen once I decide mm-hmm. on what I'm creating next year. So that I would like to have every day a, hey, here's the three things that are actually going to move the chains down the field, that, you know, I am very internally motivated when I'm clear on what those things are. You know, I don't necessarily need the external accountability. I just need to have a plan, if that makes sense. So,
yeah. And I also, you know, I think about this a lot. Like, people are always like, how can you work from home and like not get distracted with chores, which also, like, I will take any distraction from chores. But I think like the phrase that always comes up when people talk about that kind of thing is like, the dishes are going to get done. And so that's where I think too about like the email is going to get done. Like, you're going to respond to the people that need responses. For me, right, it's so much more powerful for me to do my best work first. Other people love checking email first and then it gets done. I know for me, if I open email at the beginning of the day, it's going to be open all day.
Mm-hmm. Also, I mean, let's be real. For the most part, I would say 99% of the stuff in my inbox and in, you know, my social media or whatever is super positive. It's like things that people that I want to talk to and people in the community that are sending like wonderful notes, or they have feedback or suggestions, or like, I love interacting with the people who listen to this show and who, you know, come to my live events and do that type of stuff. And so it's either stuff that like feels like genuine connection, or it's like a lovely little warm, fuzzy ego stroke. Like, it's, and it feels productive, you know, to watch the inbox go down towards zero. It like meets all of those little feel good things. So of course I want to be doing it. And when I spend too much time doing that, then the things that are harder to do and yet, you know, more necessary sometimes. Yeah. The email will always get answered. That's a really, I need that on a post-it, I think.
Yeah. And it's also about momentum, right? And that's too, probably with the hiking, that when you were talking about feeding yourself, I was thinking about trying to go on a long road trip, but like not stopping to put more gas in your car. And right, like, you might make it to your destination, but you're gonna have to work a lot harder if you're pushing the car down the highway mm-hmm. because it ran out of gas. And so there is a momentum. My husband is a cyclist and he always talks about conservation of momentum in terms of cycling, that like, it's easier to keep going if you don't stop. Which, duh, it makes so much sense, right? But I think about that a lot in my business too, that part of what we're trying to do with shifting these habits is get the ball rolling so that it almost takes on a life of its own. And that's where it does require a lot more effort than we think it should at the beginning. Mm-hmm. So for you, I bet the first few days of the hike, you're probably going to have to like actively remember to feed yourself.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna set alarms. This is happening. Yeah. Like, this is a whole thing. Also, there's no way I'm gonna make it through this whole thing. Like, not like, my goal is to have fun this year. So I mean, it's gonna be hard mm-hmm. and terrible, of course, as these things always are. But yeah, that there is an intention. There has to be. You need more training wheels at the beginning than you do once something becomes a habit.
Right. And if you, I mean, I think about this a lot with parenting. That like, when I just accept that everything is gonna take longer than I think it should, and it's gonna require more finagling than I think it should, because 4-year-olds have different opinions on how things should go than I do. When I can just accept that, like, my anxiety level drops tremendously, because I'm just kind of allowing things to to be what they are instead of trying to make them be something that I think they should be.
Yeah, I think that's incredibly well said. I think I have found that, I mean, obviously I can't relate to the parenting example, but whether it's hiking or writing or, and like hard things are hard. Okay.
Yeah.
And I think there's something that's really powerful in terms of anxiety reduction for me about having proper expectations for things. This idea, and it's like, I had a much better time on my second hike than my first hike, even though it was mostly miserable, because I went into it being like, long distance hiking completely alone is really awful a lot of the time. And I want to be doing it anyway. It's very type two fun. And so like my expectations were that it was going to be the worst. And so like on the days when that happened, I was like, okay, like I expected this. And when it didn't, that was great too. It's not like a, you go into it thinking that, and then therefore the expect, you know what I mean? It's not what I'm trying to say. It's not like being pessimistic, but like you said, okay, things with your kids are going to usually take longer than you think, so that when that winds up being the case, you don't have to be stressed out about it. That like, and you can still do it anyway. Like this idea that like hard stuff is just going to be hard. Okay, that's fine, you know? And
yeah,
I think so much of this like habit change stuff, which I think is a lot of the basis of what we're talking about, even if we're not necessarily using that language, for me, I have found something that is really helpful is focusing more on what I am going to do instead of what I'm not going to do. Like I, in the personality type thing, I'm like definitely a rebel. Like I want to break the rules that I set for myself even. Like, and that's, you know, I've come at it from the, I'm not going to check email first thing in the morning. I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to do this. Like whatever the things are. And then I want to do it just because I told myself, you know, oh, you can't push the red button. So then I'm like, fucking give me the red button. Right? Like, and so that's why I said before that my domino has to be what I am going to be working on. Okay. Mm-hmm. If I know that I am going to be putting my attention on this thing, it almost like crowds out the other stuff instead of trying to focus on like holding myself back from doing things, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I think that's brilliant. And I think that it's so easy to like pile on more rules, but when I think about that applied to my situation, I think like, for me, if I can meditate first thing in the morning, that sets the tone for the whole day. And then I don't necessarily need to check into all of these things if I'm centered and feeling grounded. Or like if I can get up and meditate and then write, and then I'm done writing by 7, like who cares what else I do for the rest of the
day? I feel the same way.
Because I've done the thing, right? And so, and for me, like I actually, even though I'm not technically a morning person, like a lot of my best writing happens very early in the morning because I think that my brain is kind of at its purest state. It's not like cluttered up with all of these other things. And so, yeah, I think that that's actually one of the things as I think about the day-to-day shifts that I want to make, it's really easy for me to be like, okay, all of a sudden you've got 3 hours of work every day to live your best life. And that doesn't feel like pleasure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it just becomes another to-do list of things. I think about that too, of like these things that are supposed to be fun or supposed to be self-care, or then if it just feels like, oh, I have 12 things that I have to check off in order to feel good, that's A, exhausting, and then they become things that I don't want to do. So,
right, and then you're almost doing them out of fear of what happens if you don't do them rather than coming from that love place of like, this is what my body needs on a day-to-day basis to like be healthy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that is an individual experience and choice. Like just because something works for somebody else does not mean that it's going to work for you. And that's fine.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And often I think what happens the old way, at least for me, right, is I would see what someone else was doing and I would try it and think that it was the answer. I think that's a lot about like journals and like planners, right? Like you buy the planner and you think it's going to change your life and then it doesn't work. And so you just throw it away and give up. Or I'd see someone doing something like maybe I'd watch you and you're a runner and I'm like, oh, I need to get sober and become a runner because that's going to be the thing to change my life. And I think really what we can do is let other people become models as like the jumping off point, as like, let me try this and then permission to evolve and stay on our own individual edge, right? It's like, that didn't really work for me. Like, I don't love running, but I love being outside. I really like swimming. I really like cycling. I really like moving my body. So like, how can I take that as a jumping off place and then shift it so that my needs are met? Mm-hmm. And we have to, that requires that honesty, right? And that truth telling. Because if you decide to become a runner and everybody in your life is a runner and everybody wants you to run, but you're like, I don't really like running, it's uncomfortable and it's hard.
Yeah. And ultimately, whatever comes out of it is going to feel better.
Yes.
Yeah. I love that. I think that's a good place to start to wrap up. And as you might remember from last time, the way that we end these are with some rapid fiery questions that essentially all 8 guests this season are answering the same 7 questions. If you're down to answer 7 random questions.
I can't wait. Lightning round. I love it.
What's one activity that you can always count on to make you feel good?
Having sex. Is that, yeah, like having sex always makes me feel good.
No, you can just leave it at that. That's awesome. I love it. It's funny that we were talking about the, what you want your life to look like in 5 years, because so let's fast forward 5 years and you're talking to your future self, or rather your future self is talking to you. What advice does this future self give you for what to do right now?
What's coming up is that she is kind of chuckling and being like, most of this stuff doesn't matter, right? Like most of the day-to-day decisions that I really obsess over, like just pick something and move on. It does not matter.
Who's one of your favorite people to follow on social media?
I just met a new Instagram friend when I was at my conference. She's a British writer named Laura Jane Williams. Her Instagram handle is superlatively LJ, and I'm completely smitten with her. I love her. She is funny and honest and super real, and yeah, everyone should check her out.
Laura's a friend of mine. She's actually a guest on this season too. She was in season 1 of the podcast. So, and I thought about that too when you were both speaking at Blogtacular. Yeah, Laura's the best.
I did not. I was like, how have I not had you in my life until now? She's fantastic.
Yeah, when I saw her put it in her Instagram stories when you two got together, and I'm like, that should definitely be happening. She's lovely.
Yeah.
How do you typically spend the last hour of your day?
Ooh, good question. These days we're in this house buying process. So it's a lot of like internet looking at things, which is not what makes me thrive. Ideally, I spend the last hour of my day washing my face, flossing my teeth, brushing my teeth, doing all of that kind of body care routine. Then I get in bed and I take my glasses off, which helps me sort of like it kind of blurs the edges, and helps me bring my focus to like my immediate, cause I'm nearsighted. And then I'm reading fiction, like really good fiction.
I have heard that advice from other people about reading fiction at night. And it's funny because speaking of things that work for other people and don't work for me, I cannot read fiction at night because I get so hooked into it that I'm like, what happens next? What happened? And that's how I wind up still awake at 3 o'clock in the morning. Like I cannot read fiction at bedtime.
Yeah, I am currently halfway through the Outlander series, and it's really good.
Okay.
It's really fun.
So the next question is about books. Which 2 or 3 books of any genre, any type of book, would you say have either had the biggest impact on you or that you recently have found yourself recommending or rereading?
Definitely Outlander. Everyone, it's so good. If you like kind of grand sweeping historical, and there's some, you know, time travel in there. So I'm a huge fan of Outlander. What else? I recently read, why isn't the name of the book is escaping me. Oh my gosh. Why can I not think of the name of this book? I recently read a book, like a spiritual book that had a huge impact on me. And I cannot, oh my gosh, this is just a ridiculous answer because I can't think of the book. I'll think of it and I'll email it to you.
Okay.
Or I'll look it up when I've all my books are packed up right now because we're in the middle of this move. So, which is why it's not coming to me. The other book that made a huge impact on me, honestly, that like sort of helped me change my life was This Naked Mind. And it helped me quit drinking. And that is a book that I would recommend to anybody who is curious about sobriety and like wants to kind of let go of some of the stories that alcohol has played in their life. That's a book that's made a huge difference.
That is one that I have not read, so I will definitely do that.
Yeah, it's really good. It kind of takes like every reason that somebody would have for continuing to drink and really dissects it.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So the last question, if you could leave our community, the listeners, with one call to action, what would it be? Maybe a question to ask themselves or a small action to take?
I would challenge everybody to think about like that thing that's on the tip of your tongue that you're ready to sort of release. You know, as you said, Nicole, like those five words that could change everything. And like, give your, I think it starts with giving yourself permission to want what you want. So that, and then like, put it, make it real somewhere. So tell somebody or write it down. You don't have to put it on Instagram if you don't want to, but do something to sort of just give it a life.
I love that. I think that's such a good jumping off point. So what's the best place for people to find you and say hi online? Do you have a favorite way to connect with new folks?
Yeah, I think Instagram is probably the social media platform. It is definitely the social media platform where I spend the most time. So I'm over there. My handle is at the Tiffany Han, and that's Han spelled H-A-N like solo. And then I do a weekly podcast. So if you need something to listen to between seasons of Real Talk Radio, my podcast is called Raise Your Hand, Say Yes. And I'm on all of the places where you listen to podcasts. And, I have an interview with Nicole that everybody can go back and listen to in the archives. So those would be like the couple of places. I send out a weekly newsletter, all of that. And you can get more information about that at my website, which is just tiffanyhan.com.
And I will put links to all of those things in the show notes. Tiffany, thank you so much.
Nicole, thank you. This was the best.
And that's our show for today. Thanks so much for listening and for being part of the Real Talk Radio family. Speaking of the Real Talk Radio family, I want to give a huge shout out to Adam Day, my producer and sound engineer. Adam created the music for this show, and he makes everything work and flow and sound way better than I ever could on my own. You can find him and his music, which is awesome, by the way, and his sound editing work at adamday.net. And as I said way back at the top of the episode, this is a 100% listener-supported show. The show is made possible by awesome people like Diana. Hi, Diana.
Hello.
You ready to answer five random rapid-fire questions?
I hope so. Yes.
it's not a test, so don't worry. There's literally no wrong answers. My favorite question first. What are you totally obsessed with right now?
I feel like I'm pretty obsessed with mental health right now, I guess in general.
Yeah, I mean, that's an awesome answer. Totally.
Yeah. My own and others. I don't know.
When it comes to money, what's one thing that you purposefully don't spend much money on? And then what's one thing that you feel like is a totally worthwhile splurge for you when you can?
Well, I'll start with the splurge because recently I've been really enjoying like spending money on like massages or getting my nails done because I just feel like I need to take care of myself more. And then something I purposely don't spend money on. I like never go clothes shopping. Like I hate buying new clothes because I don't know. I guess I just feel like it's a waste. Yeah.
I also don't enjoy the process of clothes shopping. Like it's funny to me. I mean, I guess this is why folks are different, but when there's people that find that actively fun, like that's not, nothing sounds less fun to me than that.
Yeah. I hate them all. So
yeah, totally agreed. And I also don't really like shopping for clothes online because then they never fit. So, I mean, these are very first world problems, but yes, I agree with you. If anything were possible, what's one of your big dreams or fantasies?
Oh, well, I really want to visit Italy. So, I mean, that's like a dream. And then like, I don't know. Yeah, I guess I'll just say that.
Yeah, why not? Go eat a lot of pasta, have a good time. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, exactly.
What's one thing that you'd love to do between now and the end of the year?
The end of the year being December. I don't know if that's a stupid question. Okay. Well, I am actually planning to go on like my first trip by myself within the next like month or two. So I'm like super excited to do that.
I'm all about solo travel. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, I've never done it before.
Yeah, no, that's going to be great. I mean, I'm totally into it. Last question. What's one specific thing that you wish people were more open and honest about?
I guess to go back to my, now I feel like my head is like flooding with ideas now, because I wanted to go back to what I'm totally obsessed about and say I wish people were more open about their mental health. But I think I also wish people were more open about their relationships. Because, you know, like you go on Facebook and everyone looks like their relationship is great and it's probably not. So I don't know.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I just want to hear more about the problems and how people get through it.
Yeah. And just like their real life, that like it can be, you can be really happy and it can be awesome, but it doesn't mean that it's like that all the time. So just some more honesty about kind of the real life ups and downs.
Yes.
Yeah. So you're a member of our Patreon support squad, which means that you're one of the people that listeners can thank for making this podcast possible, since you make a powerful reoccurring pledge that helps to fund the costs of producing the show each season, for which I'm super grateful. And I would love for you to share two things: why you decided to support the show, and then what's been your favorite thing since joining our little community.
Okay, well, why did I decide to support this show? I've never given money to another podcast before, but I just really liked all the different people that you would bring on. I guess the whole like real talk thing is just, I think we need to hear more from people that you like to talk to. So I love that. And then, oh, I forgot the second question already.
Oh, no, that's okay. You'd be surprised. A lot of people say that. If you have a favorite thing since you've joined the community.
I like getting emails.
Yeah, the Friday emails are my favorite thing.
And also I like that there is a book club. I've been meaning to get more involved in that, but it just like the months go too fast and then I don't like participate as much as I want to, but I plan on getting more involved with the community.
Yeah. Other people have said the same thing about the book club, and then we'll read the book like 3 months later and come back and still want to talk about it. And I'm here for that too. So you don't have to, I'm not trying to tell you what to do. You certainly don't have to do it in the same time frame, but I'm glad that you, enjoy the recommendations. Totally.
Oh, that's good to know.
Yeah. And then, do you want to share where you live? Maybe a social media link or something in case folks want to reach out?
I don't have anything interesting on social media, to be honest.
Hey, that's a totally fine answer too.
But I live in San Diego right now, but I'm originally from New Jersey, so I feel like I got to mention that.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Yeah, and I've been here for 5 years, so.
Where you have terrible weather.
Yeah, it sucks right now.
It's the worst, right?
Yeah.
So for everyone listening, if you love the podcast, if you want to help keep it going, if you want over 40 hours of bonus content, plus lots of other fun opportunities and extras, just go to patreon.com/NicoleAntoinette to make your pledge of $8 or more for each 8-episode season. I can't tell you how much your support means to me, and it'll be so much fun to get to know you better after you've joined our community. Perhaps we can even record a future outro together like this one. That would be a blast. So until next time, here's a big virtual hug and a reminder that we're all just doing the best we can, and no matter what, we're in this together.